Mike Malloy here.
We're live tonight. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for hanging out. Stick around. We'll have a fairly wild ride of a program this evening. Yeah, I was off last night because I was all full of drugs. I did what every sensible American person should do over the age of 50, and that is periodically have a colonoscopy. I had no idea that this was colorectal cancer awareness month. It just so happened that I had this scheduled. And once you get it done, you certainly have a sense of relief. Either way, it just so happened that with mine, I'm not going to dwell on this, but there was nothing there. No, not even polyps, nothing. Just completely, you could go in there and play tennis if you wanted to. But the process is not difficult. I've heard all these horror stories over the years from people say, oh, the prep for a colonoscopy is just miserable. No, it's not. It really isn't. And as far as the procedure itself, it took about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour. And the only bad part of it was the drugs. I just don't like those kinds of drugs. There's certain drugs I love to get, but I had Demerol. Yeah, Demerol is one of the drugs they gave me, and I hate Demerol. It's just awful. But that's why I took the night off last night. I was ready to come back to work, but the drugs leave you kind of goofy for a good, at least did me anyway, for a good 24 hours. So if you are 50 or older and have not had a colonoscopy, you really should. Colon cancer is one of the big killers, and it is entirely curable. Again, I'm not going to dwell on this too long, but the exam itself is the cure for the potential for colon cancer. When they go inside your colon with the probe, the end of the probe is a little wire hook that comes out. If the finds something, it's very simple to push. The little loop comes out, hook it around the polyp, snip, it's gone. So if you are 50 or older and you haven't had a colonoscopy, it's very simple. Why not? It is an invasive screening. It is indeed. What could be more invasive than that, right? All the way up through your gut. But it is just something that we should do, just like exercise, just like diet, just like not smoking, so on and so forth. So that's where I was last night. I stayed home and watched a bunch of movies that Bob Alexander had sent and documentary stuff that after a while I'm just, ready to pull my eyes out because it gets me so pissed off, some of the stuff that comes out of documentaries. So anyway. And tomorrow night, excuse me, tomorrow night also will be off. It functioned for Molly's preschool, or not preschool, but her kindergarten. And we definitely have to go to it because this is the last year that she's at this particular school. She's been there for 3 years. So we will have a best of again tomorrow night. But again, as far as my procedure was concerned, everything is perfectly okay. It always has been. And I think the reason, even though I had a brother die of colon cancer, that's one of the reasons that I have this done. And I had a sister die of lung cancer. So, I've got cancer in the family. And that's one of the reasons I don't smoke after smoking for years. I quit a decade ago. And it's one of the reasons that I get a colonoscopy. So as unpleasant as it is, and it's not, it isn't as bad as people say. It really isn't. I mean, that's nonsense. I don't know why. The mythology of, oh, the night before when you have to drink that stuff. Oh, my God. It's not a big deal. All right. So if you're 50 or older, please do it for you. No, not for me. Not because, some 25-cent per program talk show host is telling you to do that. Just for yourself. Just for yourself and the people who love you. All right. Okay. Enough preaching. It just comes with my explanation of where I was last night. Granny D. is dead. She died of at age 100. She died at her home of chronic respiratory illness. She was with her family. If you remember, in 1999, when she was 90 years old, she started walking across the country for peace. And she did it. She walked 3,200 miles at 90 years of age. She passed away, as I said, with her family and friends with her. Funeral plans had not been announced as of yesterday. A public memorial service is planned. So Granny D dead at age 100. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, all you have to do is just use a search engine and find out who Granny D was. We mentioned last week the story from Denver. Officials at Sacred Heart of Jesus Catholic School. The story's from Denver, but the school, I believe, is in Boulder, I think. Or maybe not. Sacred Heart of Jesus Catholic School, acting at the direction of the Archdiocese of Denver, decided to not re-enroll two little kids because their parents are lesbians. Following fierce protests of that decision, the Archbishop of Denver has written an op-ed where he says the church, quote, does not claim that the children of lesbians are less loved by God, end quote. Yet he stands by his decision because the church, quote, does teach that sexual intimacy by anyone outside of marriage is wrong, end quote. Now, yeah, I know, I'm gagging on this already myself with this entire gay sex scandal that just ripples through now the Vatican and Rome, the child abuse scandal that has ripped through the Catholic priesthood for the past, what, two millennia? But certainly come to the attention of the world over the past 20 years. And these sons of bitches have the right to say that sexual intimacy by anyone outside of marriage is wrong. You hypocritical bastards with your robes and your incense. You make me sick. The Archbishop Charles Chappett, in an article was published yesterday or today, today's edition of the Denver Catholic Register said, quote, the church does not claim that people with a homosexual orientation are bad or that their children are less loved by God. Quite the opposite. But what the church does teach is that sexual intimacy by anyone outside marriage is wrong. That marriage is a sacramental covenant and that marriage can only occur between a man and a woman, regardless of what we're doing. Son of a bitches. ParentDish.com. Website that was vocally against what this filthy archdiocese in Denver has done to these children. Tom Henderson, writing at Parent Dish, said, quote, what if this little girl had divorced parents? What if she was born out of wedlock? What if her father cheated on her mother? What, would she still be banned from kindergarten? Somehow, Tom Henderson writes, I doubt it. Well, you're right, Tom. Of course not. The Catholic Church is the most homophobic, anti-woman organization on earth, with the possible exception of Islam, with the possible exception of evangelical Christians, with the possible exception of some Orthodox Jews. You see, we just keep going round and round the same religious crazy circle there, don't we? Huh? Bastards. Now, as far as the Catholic Church, oh my goodness, the chief exorcist of the Catholic, yeah, they have one. The chief exorcist of the Vatican, the Catholic Church, Father Gabriel Amorth, says Satan himself is lurking in the very heart of the Roman Catholic Church. Satan is in the Vatican. There's more to this. Stick around. You've got to hear this. Oh, and he also said that people who are possessed by Satan vomit shards of glass and pieces of iron. Oh, my God. Souls of my faith, burn the palms of all my hands. If I could learn and be complete, if I could walk righteously again, because I won't get right with God. Yes, you know you've got to get right with God.
50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So the chief exorcist of the Catholic Church of the Vatican, Father Gabriel Amorth, says that the Vatican is infected by Satan. Satan is in the Vatican. He also said that people who are possessed by Satan vomit shards of glass and pieces of iron. Mm-hmm. He added that the assault on Pope Benedict XVI, the Nazi Pope, on Christmas Eve by the mentally unstable woman. If you were watching the midnight mass from Rome, as I did, you know, I love to watch it. It's just fascinating. It's like something out of a horror movie. But you saw that woman jump up, jump across a line of people and attack, the Nazi Pope. It didn't hurt him. It knocked him down. He got back up and went up and did his homina, homina, homina. But anyway, this exorcist says that that assault and the sex abuse scandals, which have engulfed the church in the U.S., Ireland, Germany, and other countries, were proof, I tell you, that the Antichrist is waging a war against the Pope. Father Amorth, who's 85 and who has been the Holy See's chief exorcist for 25 years, said, quote, "The devil resides in the Vatican, and you can see the consequences," end quote. See, and again, it escapes Father Amorth the irony of what he's saying. You're damn right, Father Amorth, but it's not a horned, cloven-hoofed beast. The exorcist went on, quote, "He can remain hidden or speak in different languages or even appear to be sympathetic. At times, he makes fun of me, but I'm a man who's happy in his work," end quote. Now, while there has been resistance and mistrust toward the concept of exorcism among some Catholics, Pope Benedict XVI has no such doubts. Mm-mm. Father Amorth, whatever, the exorcist says, quote, "His Holiness believes wholeheartedly in the practice of exorcism. He has encouraged and praised our work," end quote. Father Amorth went on, "The evil influence of Satan was evident in the highest ranks of the Catholic hierarchy with, quote, cardinals who do not believe in Jesus and bishops who are linked to the demon." End quote. In a rare insight into the world of exorcism, the Italian priest told La Repubblica newspaper that the 1973 film The Exorcist gave, quote, "substantially exact," end quote, impression of what it was like to be possessed by the devil. People possessed by evil sometimes had to be physically restrained while they were being exorcised. They would scream, utter blasphemies, and spit out sharp objects. Father Amorth, who claims to have performed 70,000 exorcisms, that's one a year since he was 10. I mean, that's 1,000 a year since he was 10. All right, 15. 1,000 a year, that's 3 a day. Are you lying? Father Amorth says, "From their mouths, anything can come out, pieces of iron as long as a finger, but also rose petals. When the possessed dribble and slobber and need cleaning up, I do that too. Seeing people vomit doesn't bother me. The exorcist has one principal duty, to free human beings from the devil," end quote. Father Amorth, who has written a book about his vocation entitled Memoirs of an Exorcist, says that the attempted assassination of John Paul II by a Turkish gunman in 1981 and recent revelations of, quote, violence and pedophilia, end quote, committed by Catholic priests against children in their care was also the work of the devil. The devil. In an interview with Vatican Radio a couple of years ago, Father Amorth said, quote, of course the devil exists, and he not only possesses a single person, and he can not only possess a single person, but also groups and entire populations. He said, quote, I am convinced that the Nazis were all possessed. All you have to do is think about what Hitler and Stalin did, end quote. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Father Amorth, I have, and you can, anybody can get them. They're all over, again, go to Google or any search engine and just type in Catholic priests, Nazis. And look at the photographs that come up, Father Amorth. Look at all the Nazis, the priests, the bishops, the archbishops giving the Heil Hitler salute surrounded by these sons of bitches. Don't tell me 80 years after the fact that the Roman Catholic Church was not in full support of the Nazis. They loved the executions of the Jews because after all, the Jews had killed Christ. This is way before Vatican II. These crazy sons of bitches, and they will deny a kindergartner the right to go to school because the child's parents are gay. Son of a bitch.
The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Where in the hell did you dig that music out? 25 before the hour. I've just had a belly full of the Catholic Church. I really have. It's beyond annoying what they're doing. It's the most anti, and always has been, the most anti-life, anti-real, anti-compassionate organization. I'm not talking about individual people who have operated who knows why, within the Catholic Church, who have worked for social justice, and there have been a lot of them, who have worked with the poor, who have done this and done that. So don't send me emails reminding me of all the good people. I'm not talking about the people. I'm talking about the institution. The institution is corrupt and filthy. It is demonic. That's where this guy is right, you know, this so-called exorcist. It's demonic in the sense of small d, not the demon Satan, who doesn't exist. It is, it's just an ugly, hate-filled organization that is mostly interested, if not exclusively interested, in its own propagation. It couldn't care less about anything other than the greed and the filth that this organization is all about. And if you're Catholic, I'm sorry. I know I'm offending you, and I really don't care. I'll tell you why I don't care. Well, I do care, because you should get your mind clear of this garbage. You really, really should. But who said it? Give me a child till he's five, I'll give you a Catholic for life. So good luck. A growing number of Americans, nearly half the country now, think global warming worries are exaggerated. According to a new Gallup poll, more and more people also doubt the scientific warnings of severe environmental fallout that will ever occur. Hey, it's not going on. There is no such thing. Look at all the snow we had, you dumbasses. There's your proof. There's no global warming. This is so sick. And the new doubts come, according to the Reuters agency where I got the story from, the new doubts come as Obama is pressuring Congress to produce legislation significantly cutting smokestack emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases. And I like this. Listen to this. With congressional elections less than 8 months away, many lawmakers are hesitant to take on a controversial energy and environment bill, especially if voter interest is waning. You goddamn people. You 50%. You jerks. You don't care. You're going to be dead within the next 30, 40, 50 years. Your ass will be buried somewhere. It won't matter to you. What about the kids and grandkids and great-grandkids and people not born yet? You selfish sons of bitches. Ignorant. Stupid. Global warming doesn't exist. Listen to the pig man. He'll tell you why it's a liberal plot to destroy jobs. That's what that is. Where's my $10 million paycheck this month? Dumbasses. This Gallup poll conducted March 4th through 7th indicates a reversal in public sentiment on an issue that not only involves the environment, but also economic and national security concerns. 48% of Americans now believe that the seriousness of global warming is exaggerated, up from 41% last year and 31% in 1997 when Gallup first asked the question. Jesus Christ. A growing number of Americans are doubting that global warming is related to human activities. 50% now blame human activities and 46% blame natural changes in the environment, like, you know, the fluctuations in the sun's intensity or the fallout from volcanic eruptions. Whee! It's madness. Have you seen or heard Patrick Kennedy's anger in the House? It's being referred to in the media as Patrick Kennedy's meltdown. Why is it just like they did to Howard Dean? Just like this filthy, disgusting, major, mainstream, corrupt, filthy, goddamn media that we have in this country. They refer now to what Patrick Kennedy said as his meltdown. Well, I guess so. He called the news media despicable. He was speaking in favor of a resolution sponsored by Kucinich to withdraw U.S. troops from Afghanistan within 30 days. Kennedy accused the media of ignoring the war and obsessing over garbage like the scandal that forced Representative Eric Massa to quit. We have a bit of sound here for you that we're going to play. This is Patrick Kennedy in the House. What do we have? Two pieces, Gabby? Okay. You ready? Here's the first one. This is Patrick Kennedy.
There isn't a soldier in this country who's laid down their lives for our nation that isn't a hero. And no one in here disagrees with that. What is shameful is our policy that puts them in harm's way when they don't need to be. And make no mistake about it. This is not about national security, because if it's about national security, it's about whether we put our treasure and our lives on the line in Afghanistan, or whether we put it in Kuwait, or whether we put it in the Sudan, or whether we put it in some other place in the world, all of which is where we need it. Where do we need it the most? That should be the question, because we don't have the resources to put it everywhere. So don't come and tell me our national security requires that we have it in Afghanistan, because that's not the only place we need it. The question is where our priorities should be.
Now, that's Kennedy blasting the idea that we are to continue to invade countries and send troops and commit wholesale slaughter of innocent people while our own people are shot up and have their heads blown off. And next, he goes after the media.
If anybody wants to know where cynicism is that there's two press people in this gallery. We're talking about Eric Massa 24/7 on the TV. We're talking about War and Peace, $3 billion, 1,000 lives, and no press. No press. You want to know why the American public is fit? They're fit because they're not seeing their Congress do the work that they're sent to do. It's because the press of the United States is not covering the most significant issue of national importance, and that's the laying of lives down in the nation for the service of our country. It's despicable, the national press corps right now.
Gentlemen's time has expired. Who seeks recognition? The gentleman from California.
Isn't that chipper? Your time has expired. Sit down, young man. Who seeks recognition? The gentleman from California. Okay, it's your turn. Like a chirping goddamn vulture. Huh? You ever hear a vulture chirp?
Somebody working for the Boston Herald on her blog, Holly Robichaud, she writes the Lone Republican blog, wrote, quote, "Who would ever have believed that a Kennedy would be complaining about the press? I feel like I'm living in an alternative reality. Normally, I would think an outgoing congressman is making statements to set himself up for their next job. But who would hire a Kennedy after that meltdown yesterday?" Another blogger, Don Serber, called it a hissy fit and said that Kennedy was only upset that the media wasn't covering his own grandstanding over a junk resolution. Oh, there's more here. It's just disgusting. You know, every once in a while, rational people like Patrick Kennedy, of course, I go through this every night, just break down. They get so goddamn angry. And not just the massive ignorance in this country, just the unspeakable ignorance in this country. Political, scientific, mathematics, unbelievable ignorance. But also about this filthy, corrupt press corps, this mainstream media. These goddamn people like Brian Williams and the rest of these freaks. All day long on MSNBC and CNN, you can see this garbage 24 goddamn 7. Over and over and over again. Nothing but drivel. Nothing. And then if you've got the stomach for it, I'm pissed off tonight. I really am. If you got the stomach for it, watch the Sunday chat show sometimes. If you want to really lose your lunch and breakfast and mind, just watch. God. Robert Perry, a couple of days ago, over at consortiumnews.com, has a lengthy piece about how Reagan's propaganda succeeded. And this is exactly what Perry talks about. How during the Reagan years, the press corps was warned. I mean, specifically warned by murderous sons of bitches like Elliot Abrams and a whole collection of these neocon bastards that they, the press, had better get in line, had better stop criticizing Ronald Reagan, because if they didn't, the Reagan administration, including William Casey, would see that these sons of bitches lost their licenses, lost their businesses, and never worked again. And look how goddamn effective it's been.
Trouble.
Border to border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
It is 10 before the hour. In Greece, there is just chaos reigning. And some of the more honest journalists in this country, there are still a few, are suggesting that what Greece is going through right now is prelude to what could be happening here. Today in central Athens, thousands upon thousands of striking workers and rock-throwing young people resulted in clashes between riot police and these demonstrators. They're protesting these insane austerity measures that the Greek government has said it has no choice but to implement. Now, Greece has a socialist government. They've only been in office, what, about 6-7 months. What they have inherited is the filth and debris and collapse and of the capitalist rape of the entire country. And one of the biggest perpetrators against Greece over the past 10 years was, ever since the euro was put into play, was Goldman Sachs. Every time you goddamn turn around, there is Goldman Sachs eating at another collapse, another tragedy, another national emergency, another banking system that goes down the pipes. Every goddamn time you turn around, there they are, Goldman Sachs, Goldman Sachs, Goldman Sachs, paying themselves billions of dollars in bonuses and just raping and pillaging. And it seems like nothing can stop them. Nothing. So Greece is under all this pressure from various markets, investment markets, which is another instrument of capitalist thuggery. Jesus God! And the European Union to reduce its deficit from, what does it say here, 12.7% of economic output. And the pressure is to get it down to 8.7. You know what they're, this year, you know what they're going to have to do? Education comes to a halt. Government workers come to a halt. Service comes to a halt. Street sweepers, garbage collection, national phone service, everything comes to a halt. Why? So Goldman Sachs can make their money. Well, the Greek people say no. God damn you, no. 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 Wages have been cut. Pensions have been frozen. This is where the strikes and protests from labor unions is coming from. Initially, the labor union said, well, let's see what's going on here. Now, today, they had a 24-hour general strike. Can you imagine that occurring in this country? We just lay down. That's all we do. We just lay down and turn on Glenn Beck. Or go join some goddamn patriot outfit and pick up a gun and shoot at stumps out in the field somewhere. We don't do anything. 24-hour strike. That's the second one, right? The strike grounded airline flights, halted public transport, suspended news broadcasts. Everything came to a stop. So what does the government do? Call out the troops. It's a socialist government. Where are the sons of bitches that put the country into this situation? Where are they? Where are the Bush crime family equivalents in Greece? Where did they skip out and retire to? Demonstrators took to the streets of Athens and Thessaloniki, banging drums and chanting slogans like, "No sacrifice for plutocracy." Real jobs, higher pay. And they were joined by uniformed police, Coast Guard, and fire service officers. They're on strike, too. Riot police were called out. Special government troops. Tens of thousands of people in Athens. Associated Press says clashes broke out soon after the march began, with riot police firing tear gas and stun grenades to disperse masked youths who smashed pavements, marble steps, and building facades to use as projectiles to throw at police. Businessmen in suits scurried for cover, their eyes streaming. Aw, the poor bastards, they got a little tear gas? Another 15,000-20,000 people in the northern city of Thessaloniki. I don't send me a pronouncer on that one. I really don't care. Prime Minister George Papandreou's socialists, who came to power last October in a landslide election victory, because the people knew that they had been had by these right-wing sons of bitches, by the international banking cartel, and by Goldman Sachs. So they tried to throw everybody out, but it was too late. Too late. Too late. So now, the people, the unions, the workers, the middle class in Greece is striking out at the only government they've got. And that happens to be socialists. And it's a shame, too, because the right-wing capitalist sons of bitches who set this up are long gone. Unions are saying the ordinary Greeks are being forced to pay a disproportionate price for past fiscal mismanagement. Man, I'll tell you, and what do we do in this country? We talk about Eric Massa and his naked tickle parties. Ooh, that's very important news. That's what we talk about in the United States of America. The hour. This is the Molloy Show. Thanks for sticking around for another hour of abuse. Well, not you. I'm not abusing you. I'm just abusing the haters. And I believe in fighting fire with fire. I really do. I'm just not a turn the other cheek kind of guy. Sorry. I want to get Prairie 2's latest missive in here real quick. The latest battles in the economic war. Here's what he writes. U.S. economic diplomacy is not going very well. Basically, we are at war, and as usual, the U.S. is the bad guy. Tim Geithner, U.S. Treasury Secretary, has delivered a blunt warning to the European Commission that plans to clamp down hedge funds and private equity groups that have been looting and pillaging across the European Union is a no-no. After what has been done to Greece, Spain, Portugal, and Ireland by U.S. firms, it isn't surprising the European Union wants regulation to keep the pirates out. But this would interfere with the Wall Street banks. And this threatens the current bubble economy. And the Obama administration is annoyed. Secretary of State Clinton didn't have any better luck in Brazil on her tour of South America, where she tried to line up their vote for a U.N. Security Council resolution against Iran. She was told, no thanks. You see, Brazil is about to wage a trade war with the United States over cotton subsidies. The U.S. is the world's largest exporter of cotton, but that is primarily because the U.S. no longer has any textile industry of its own, and Brazil wants to avoid a similar fate. Brazil won its case at the World Trade Organization and is allowed to impose the tariff increases. The U.S. has been subsidizing cotton farmers and providing a loan guarantee program for international buyers of U.S. cotton. U.S. taxpayers were paying to keep cotton cheap and paying foreign companies to buy it. The Brazilians plan to raise duties on cotton products from between 6% and 35% to 100%. Duties on appliances and electronics could go from 20% to 40%, and on cars from 35% to 50%. Brazil also could impose further penalties known as cross-retaliation, breaking patents in the pharmaceuticals, technology, and media industries. It's the patents and copyrights that would really affect U.S. companies since we don't export any manufactured goods anymore. Chinese investments in U.S. treasuries are, quote, market investment behavior, and we don't wish to politicize them, end quote. So says Yi Gang, director of the State Administration of Foreign Exchange in China that controls roughly $2.4 trillion in foreign reserves. Gang said, quote, we are a responsible investor, and in the process of these investments, we can definitely achieve a mutually beneficial result, end quote. He went on to say that China is not purchasing large amounts of gold, which would drive up the price, and the price of gold promptly went down. Of course, everything China does in this regard is a state secret, so most likely China just wants to acquire gold at the best possible price. They already hold at least 1,100 tons and are rumored to be buying another 900 tons. Saying they will continue to buy U.S. bonds also keeps bonds from dropping in value as China quietly sells them. Nobody knows how many China really holds, but they are buying and selling constantly all over the world. We are at war. And as usual, the poor and the middle class are bearing the brunt of it. The dead and wounded aren't so obvious in an economic war, but the body count is there just the same, and it's only getting started. Pray 2. Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. I don't know how somebody can't be pissed off at what's going on. I just don't get it. The ignorance in this country, this global economic meltdown brought about by companies like Goldman Sachs, and of course this filthy, putrid media that we have in this country that is infested with these right-wingers, almost convinced and has convinced a number of Americans that the global economic meltdown was caused by Acorn or people who can't afford houses and bought them anyway. You stupid, stupid people. I don't know how anybody can not be pissed. Couple emails here about the corruption, the organized corruption that is the Catholic Church. Jan writes, "Dear Mr. Malloy," ooh, that always impresses me. But I don't, you know, you can call me Mike. "I am not a Catholic, but I wanted to write a quick note to augment your comments on the Catholics who were Nazis. That had always distressed me until recently. But recently, I was visiting the Holocaust Museum in D.C., and I noticed quite a number of priests and nuns who gave their lives saving people, so that should be recognized. The shame of the Catholic Church in aiding and abetting Hitler was one thing to remember, but the sacrifice of those in the Church who bravely resisted should not be forgotten either. Even though we all feel such disgust with much of the Church's stance on social issues today, there are many activists in the Church, including nuns, who march every year for peace, and who do many good things, and who minister to people in need. On the other hand, this whole homophobia thing between the Catholics and the evangelicals is evil, and they're encouraging hatred and injustice." Jan, I have always made the distinction between the institutional Catholic Church and individual Catholic lay people and Catholic priests and nuns who have tried to affect social justice. My point has always been that they needn't bother themselves with the putridness of the Catholic Church in order to do their good works. In fact, if they would get the hell away from the Catholic Church and continue to do their good works, I think their own souls would probably gain something, at least in their minds, that is being sucked out of them by this filthy institution in Rome. Yeah, I'm very pissed off tonight at Catholics. I really am. I'm not Catholics, the Catholic Church. I have good friends who are Catholic. I have family members who are Catholic until they wised up or died. Rosalind writes, Mike, I remember the old Pope, who was said to have been murdered shortly after into his reign, saying, yeah, remember that guy that was that in the Nixon years, Ford years? He said before he was murdered, quote, have you noticed that the smoke of Satan has entered into the sanctuary and nobody has seen it leave? And shortly after that, he was murdered. Roz writes, I've cut the following out of a website, which I have read before. Also, Malachi Martin has written about it. Quote, most frighteningly for Pope John Paul II, he had come up against the irremovable presence of a malign strength in his own Vatican and in certain bishops' chanceries. It was what knowledgeable churchmen called the superforce. Rumors, always difficult to verify, tied its installation to the beginning of Pope Paul VI's reign in 1963. Indeed, Paul had alluded somberly to, quote, the smoke of Satan, which has entered the sanctuary, end quote, an oblique reference to an enthronement ceremony by Satanists in the Vatican. Besides, the incidence of satanic pedophilia, rites and practices, rites, R-I-T-E-S, was already documented among certain bishops and priests as widely dispersed as Turin in Italy and South Carolina in the United States. The cultic acts of satanic pedophilia are considered by professionals to be the culmination of the fallen archangel's rites. R-I-T-E-S. Rosalind. I'm telling you, it is a massively, murderously insane institution that has perpetrated hate, dissension, poison, death, destruction, murder, mayhem for 2,000 years, 1,800 years. It just continues. And the evangelical Christians seem to be trying to outdo them. Have you noticed that? We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. I don't know why we always play pieces from Carmina Burana. I guess it sounds so satanic, God clashy. You know what I'm saying? Apologies again to Carl Orff. It does, doesn't it? It sounds like people being burned at the stake because they don't believe in what the church tells them to believe in, or having their teeth ripped out. War Cloud, heavily armed Hopi in Arizona writes, Mike, here in the Verde Valley, we have the usual collection of completely psycho Jesus aficionados. They are, unfortunately for them, up against powers they don't understand here in Hopi land. The local cathedral erected a 30-foot, I'm not blanking you, a 30-foot color statue of the Virgin Mary in the yard of their little community center to much fanfare and pride. Not far off was a little 6-foot statue of Kokopelli, the Hopi spirit of fertility, mischief, music, springtime, and basically sex and furious getting it on. How this deity got in the church grounds is anyone's guess. I think they really had no clue. Anyway, the attack of the big-ass Mary lasted about a month. A great wind came along one night and spread her fiberglass all over the yard in great holy pieces. Kokopelli is still there, perfectly erect, playing his flute. These spirits have ruled this valley for 10,000 years. They are not amused by interlopers. It is notable that the Hopi are the only other tribes still on their native land and relatively unpolluted by Christianity insanity. G.R., War Cloud, Heavily Armed Hopi in Arizona. Oh, my God, is bigger than yours. And from Greg in San Antonio, I'm a podcaster for a long time now. I guess that means he gets the podcast subscription. Thank you. And I just got a piece of your show. There's a reason why Catholics are so reviled. They deserve it. They've earned their reputation not only by screwing up my sex life, but also the sex lives of my entire family. They are a virus that enters through the ears like a screwworm and eats the brains of innocent children. But the good? Ah, well, this requires years of recovery from the formidable disease to uncover, but I offer my knowledge to you and your listeners free of charge. The Catholic Church is the longest-lived bureaucratic institution in Western civilization. Any wonder now why Gandhi, when asked what he thought of Western civilization, responded, "I think it would be a good idea." Since the Chinese have about three times the amount of history of Western civilization under their belts and strongly favor authoritarian autocratic rule, what does this say about our chances for dreams of freedom? Looks like Dylan was right, and I believe he was correct that it's a simple binary choice, but I think it's either delusional thinking or enlightenment. Can't do both at the same time, unless you're schizophrenic, which the voices in my head tell me I'm not. Greg in San Antonio. Oh, man. What else we got here? Oh, yeah. Over here at University of Georgia, where I've had one daughter attend. She wound up graduating from the University of South Florida for a number of reasons. But Athens is not that far from here. And I used to spend time there when I'd go visit Wendy when she was in school. It's an interesting city. And the locus of the city, the focal point, is University of Georgia with about, I don't know what they have, Kathy, about 30,000 students. Anyway, a report out of Athens says, from the University of Georgia, I should say, says exposure to news media, that exposure has long been thought to help create a more informed and politically educated citizenry. But a new University of Georgia study finds that media exposure did little or nothing to correct a significant misperception about the most recent presidential campaign. Approximately 20% of Americans believed that then-Senator Barack Obama was a Muslim during the 2008 presidential campaign, despite stories and fact-checking websites that attempted to debunk the rumor. Professor Barry Hollander in the Grady College of Journalism and Mass Communication analyzed data from a survey of more than 2,400 people taken at three points during the campaign to see if exposure to news media helped correct misperceptions about Obama's faith. Hollander said, quote, "With most forms of political knowledge, media should theoretically make you more accurate. In this case, media exposure had no effect. Ultimately, the message here is that people believe what they want to believe." End quote. Hollander, whose study will appear in the Journal of Media and Religion, explained that his findings are consistent with psychological studies on selective memory that shows that people tend to discount facts that are inconsistent with their pre-existing beliefs. People are also less likely to remember information that conflicts with their beliefs. Hollander also found that respondents who were younger, less educated, less politically interested, politically conservative, and believed in a literal interpretation of the Bible were more likely to be among those who shifted from a perception of Obama as Christian to a perception of Obama as Muslim. We'll be back. Stay with us. Are all rich and free, but they chained my mind to an endless tomb when they took my only son from me.
He's not ready. ready to make nice, it's Mike Malloy.
Five before the hour, got an email here from Renee Louise, who writes, by the way, you know what still has my bloomers, especially in the wad, Mike? Obama's stand on the firing of the Rhode Island teachers a couple of weeks ago. I had to hear him go on about the importance of accountability on that issue while he overlooks the importance of accountability regarding the actions of the Bush crime family. Mind-blowing. And Kay Petrini, our San Francisco-based education correspondent. Mike, just a quick update. Since I've been sick for the past week, those multiple-day field trips really kick my ass. Kay is salty. I love Kay's language. After the news about the Rhode Island school last week, the one where 93 teachers and administrators were fired, it looks like the same phenomenon is going to hit very close to home. The headline in yesterday's San Francisco Chronicle read, tough choices for 12 San Francisco schools in bottom 5%. It said across California, 188 schools got the news Monday that they were the lowest of the low-performing schools, a designation that required them to be closed, converted to a charter school, or be subject to a complete overhaul of instruction and staff, starting with the principal. Dozens of Bay Area schools, including 12 in San Francisco, landed on the state's 5% lowest achieving schools list, a ranking required by the federal government. End quote, end quote, end quote. Mike, I taught in the San Francisco Unified School District for 3 years, and even though I was fortunate to teach at the academic public high school, I got to know teachers from many of the other schools. One of my friends has been a third grade teacher in a public elementary school with a majority of non-English speaking students for the past 30 years. Parenthetically, she adds, yeah, he's one of those fat cats whose salary after that many years stands at barely $60,000 a year. Whom do you know who commits to doing a job for 30 freaking years? Never mind a job that kicks a person's ass on a daily basis. How long do you think that one of those Goldman Sachs types would last in my friend's classroom? Or mine? Bottom line is, in any profession, there are some unqualified teachers in the bunch, but overall, people who choose to teach in any school, public or private, have an incredible commitment to their profession and their students. Yes, there's a high dropout rate among new teachers within the first 3 years, but once they pass that mark, most are in for the duration. And now, thanks to No Child Left Behind from Bush and Race to the Top from Obama, many of these dedicated teachers stand to lose their jobs. That includes teachers like my friend, who have devoted their lives to educating the next generation. It looks like American schools are going to be run on the corporate model, rather than based on sound education policy. Brilliant. After all, corporate America has done so much for this country over the past 30 years, hasn't it? Look at what great shape we're in. Funny, I don't recall any mass firings at Goldman Sachs or J.P. Morgan when they effed up. Of course not, which proves once again that the people calling the shots in this country are goddamn hypocrites. The entire lot of them. Okay. And this is from David in Minnesota. Anger at the Catholic Church. Mike, thank you for your anger at the Catholic Church and for speaking out about this horrible institution. I'm a former Catholic. I left the Catholic Church after my priest revealed my confession to three other individuals in my presence and did so in such a way as to imply that I had confessed to a far worse sin than I actually had. The harm it did to my reputation, together with the depression I'd long suffered with, put me on suicide watch. I could not believe that a priest had violated my seal of confession. I had believed that such a thing was not possible. The next day, my recovery began. I have not stepped foot in the Catholic Church since. It destroyed my faith, but that has turned out to be the ultimate blessing. I became agnostic, and within a few years I had evolved into an atheist. I no longer suffer from depression. Leaving the Catholic Church is the best decision I ever made in my life. I am now amazed at how I could have been so naive as to trust a priest. By the way, when I corresponded with the bishop of our diocese to report the canon law violation and ask for a meeting, he refused, writing that he would discuss it with the priest. Canon law requires automatic excommunication for any priest who violates the seal of confession. This particular priest was not punished in any way, and several years later is still running the same parish. Surprise, surprise, Dave. In Minnesota. Yeah, I'm at the age where a lot of the people that I knew over the years who were Catholic, who made a real, honest-to-God attempt to stay in the church, even though they knew that the institution was just insane and murderous. But they had been brought up in the Catholic Church. They had been confirmed in the Catholic Church. They had been to more confessions and more church services than they could possibly handle, I guess. And yet the disillusionment continued. And they're at a point now, people who truly believe that they need to have a religious belief or somehow they're going to, I don't know, that something terrible is missing from their lives. But they have nowhere to turn. They have nowhere to turn. And I find that incredibly sad because the whole idea of religion is such a fraud. It is such a fraud. If it gives people comfort in some hours of stress, it's because that's the only choice they really think they have, is to turn to some hocus pocus. And I mean, okay, John Lennon said, whatever gets you through the night. So I guess it's okay if Lennon said it, right? Remember the article about from Itawamba County School District in Mississippi, where one of the kids, a senior, high school senior, wanted to bring her girlfriend to the prom this spring, right? And the woman asking permission said she would attend wearing a tuxedo, and her girlfriend would wear a nice dress, and they would be just fine. Well, the Itawamba County School District's board decided last night to drop the prom because of what it called recent distractions, but without specifically mentioning the girl's request. And the student, an 18-year-old high school senior, Constance McMillan, said it was retaliation for her efforts to bring her girlfriend, also a student, to the April 2nd dance. McMillan told a newspaper in Jackson, quote, a bunch of kids at school were really going to hate me for this. So in a way, it's really retaliation. You see, school policy requires that senior prom dates be of the opposite sex. The ACLU of Mississippi had given the district until Wednesday to change that policy, arguing that banning same-sex prom dates violated this young woman's constitutional rights. Instead, the school board met and issued a statement announcing it wouldn't have the event. Miserable bastards. So, you know, not the girl who wanted to bring her girlfriend. No. This filthy school board. See, there you go again. Religion. There it is again. Itawamba County is a rural area of about 23,000 people in North Mississippi near the Alabama state line. It borders Pontotoc County, Mississippi, where more than a decade ago, school officials were sued in federal court over their practice of student-led intercom prayer and Bible classes. Back at the other school where the prom was canceled, Anna Watson, a 17-year-old junior at the high school, said she was looking forward to the prom, especially since the town's only hot spot is the bowling alley. That's where they're going to hold it, at the bowling alley. Were they going to hold it at the bowling alley? No, they're going to hold it at the school. The only other activity, according to the 17-year-old, is the bowling alley. She said, quote, I'm a little bummed out about it. I guess it's the decision that had to be made. Either way, someone was going to get disappointed. Either Constance, that's the woman who wanted to bring her date. Either Constance was or we were. I don't agree with homosexuality, but I can't change what another person thinks or does. Other students are on McMillan's side. The girl wanted to bring her girlfriend. Mackenzie Cheney, 16, said she wasn't planning to attend the prom, but, quote, it's kind of ridiculous that they can't let her wear the tux and it'd all be over with. McMillan, the young woman, said she feared she would be thrown out of the prom because, quote, we do live in the Bible Belt, end quote. Yeah, you do, kiddo. You live in the Bible Belt. You sure do. You don't keep them queers from coming to the... You know, we're going to... If we're Catholics, we're going to kick out these little kindergartners because their parents are lesbian. If we're evangelical Christians, we're going to keep this 18-year-old from her prom because she wants to bring her girlfriend. By God, how are we going to do that? We'll cancel the damn prom. ACLU can kiss our Christian asses over that one. We will just cancel the prom. Now who are you going to sue, you communist bastards? Trust me, I know. I live here. Great stuff, religion. Great stuff. Oh, man. Couple of things here, and then we're going to take some calls coming up. Probably at the top of the hour. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
There's nothing to prove to the world. There's nothing to prove to the world. There's nothing to rebel against when you get home, home, I understand. And don't let them smell those booze or use the cuss words like you like to use. And think about taking the high road, yeah, the high road, like you've always.
Watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So here goes these crazy House Democrats again. Yesterday they banned budget earmarks that would go to private industry. You know what earmarks are? Those special markups that these various representatives slip into a budget proposal for all kinds of horse snot that will satisfy the folks back home. Well, they've decided to ban those earmarks if they go to private industry. That ends a practice that has steered billions of dollars in no-bid contracts to companies and has resulted, of course, in massive corruption scandals. The ban, according to New York Times, is the most forceful step yet in a three-year effort in Congress to curb abuses in the use of earmarks. Effort by Democrats, which allow individual lawmakers to award financing for pet projects. But House Republicans, in an attempt to one-up the Democrats, these filthy Republicans, Jesus Christ, they ought to be thrown out of the country. In a quick round of political one-upmanship, the House Republicans tried to outmaneuver Democrats by calling for a ban on earmarks across the board, not just to for-profit companies. Republicans, who expect an intra-party vote on the issue this week, called earmarks, quote, a symbol of a broken Washington, end quote. Republicans calling anything a symbol of broken Washington? I don't care if you agree with Democrats, what they're doing. I certainly don't agree with very much of it. But which one of these filthy parties broke Washington? Huh? After 8 years of the most vile corruption that this country has ever seen, because it was only in the last 8 years that we entered into two wars. Because George Bush wanted to feel like his penis was bigger than somebody else's. That's why we're there. Now, of course, he was manipulated into that by the oil interests and Goldman Sachs and the rest of these filthy predatory capitalists. And now the Republicans are saying, well, you know, a symbol of broken Washington is earmarks. And we say this with a straight face. Well, straight as we can get it. Mitch McConnell, our boy, you know, Mitch, he was part of that Representative Massa naked wrestling stuff. He won't admit it, though. But, you know, we want to end earmarks because it's what broke Washington. That's what it is. Filthy pigs. Filthy pigs. Had the ban on for-profit earmarks been in place last year, it would have meant the elimination of about 1,000 awards worth a total of $1.7 billion. Oh, God. Oh, have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? I think I have. I think I have. And then this. A panel of educators convened by the nation's governors and state school superintendents proposed a uniform set of academic standards yesterday, laying out their vision for what all the nation's public school children should learn in math and English year by year from kindergarten to high school graduation. And it says here the new proposals could transform American education, replacing the patchwork of standards ranging from mediocre to world-class that have been written by local educators in every state. Under the proposed standards for English, for example, fifth graders would be expected to explain the differences between drama and prose, and to identify elements of drama like character, dialogue, stage direction. Seventh graders would study, among other math concepts, proportional relationships, operations with rational numbers, and solutions for linear equations. Oh, man, can you see the people in Texas and the rest of the Bible Belt say, oh, no, goddammit. Oh, no, that's satanic. What the hell's a linear equation? What does that lead to? Global warming? Bull feathers? Huh? Oh, no. Oh, no. What's next? You want to teach him about Caesar Chavez? Yeah, that's what's going on right now all across the South and the Southwest and probably various other parts of the country, too. Alaska and Texas are the only states that declined to participate in the standards writing effort. In keeping his state out, Governor Rick Goodhair Perry argued that only Texans should decide what children there learn. Yeah, we'll make a decision on that. We'll decide what these little kids are going to learn. We're going to teach them about Phyllis Schlafly. We're going to teach him about important people like that, like Tom DeLay and our illustrious former governor and president, George W. Bush. We're not going to teach him any of this liberal commie stuff from y'all up there in New York. Oh, my God. Well, I'll have to ask Kay if she thinks national standards are a good idea. I'm not an educator, but it seems to me that they would be, that would be a good idea. Huh? And here in Georgia, well, I'll save this till we come back, because... we're about to go into it. Well, we're in a break here. But about a race-based abortion bill that moves forward here in Atlanta, the capital of Georgia, a bill that would criminalize race-based abortions. What? You're saying? Because you live in a civilized part of the country? You mean down in Georgia, y'all have race-based abortions? No, we don't. But there's a bill that's going to pass, written by white Republicans anyway. And guess why? I'll tell you when we come back. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This next story is a little bit staggering. It was to me. I noticed when I go into Atlanta, these billboards that were going up around Metro Atlanta, and have a picture of a black kid, and the caption says, "Black children are an endangered species." Now, it was put up by an anti-abortion group, Georgia Right to Life. And the group is taking statistics that show abortions to be much more common among minorities than among whites, and then combining them with the location of abortion clinics and counseling centers near black neighborhoods, and using this correlation to accuse abortion advocates of outright eugenics. So, never one to miss a chance, the religious right crazy white boys down here in the Georgia General Assembly have entered a bill, House Bill 1155, a bill that would criminalize race-based abortions. In a narrowly cleared committee yesterday, which pulls the Georgia General Assembly closer to a full-blown abortion debate. Now, Here's the sick part, the insane part. The bill would make it illegal for anyone to solicit or coerce a woman to have an abortion, quote, based in any way on account of the race, color, or sex of the unborn child, end quote. That's what the bill says. An abortion based in any way on account of the race, color, or sex of the unborn child, end quote. Doctors would face up to 10 years in prison if they perform an abortion despite knowing that the woman has been coerced. The woman who got the abortion would not be criminally liable at all, the bill says. Some thought it hypocritical to go after doctors, but not women who want an abortion based on the baby's sex or race. Some said the measure won't pass constitutional muster and will cost Georgia significant money to fight about it in court. Several people from pro-abortion, pro-woman, and minority advocacy groups said the measure will have a chilling effect, leaving doctors nervous to perform any abortion on a black woman. But the bottom line for this debate, according to a newspaper in Macon, may be its potential to force, and this is what the sponsoring state rep, Barry Loudermilk, hopes, force a pro-life versus pro-choice vote on the floor of the House and eventually the state Senate. Oh, my God. Now, these are all dumbass white boys from central Georgia. None of them, I don't believe, are from Atlanta. They may be from outside Atlanta, metro Atlanta, but the hypocrisy here is just mind-boggling. The duplicity is mind-boggling. All these billboards around Atlanta, pictures of a black child, and it says, the caption says, black children are an endangered species. If they are, it is because of the policies, economic policies, tax policies, social policies instituted by white boys in the Georgia General Assembly. Now, any fool knows that, except the fools who are doing this. People keep saying to me, why do you keep living down there? Why do you keep living in the South? I'm beginning to question that myself. Now, the position this is going to put physicians in is almost untenable, and this is what they're hoping for. Supposing a doctor, and by the way, I misspoke when I say, I'm just quoting from the newspaper article, several people from pro-abortion, pro-woman, and pro-minority advocacy groups. I've said before on this program, and I mean it, there's no such thing as a pro-abortion person. The people who try to make sure that the right to control our own body and the privacy of a doctor's office or a clinic, these are not pro-abortion people. They are pro-privacy people. But the Macon newspaper, obviously, is going to list it as pro-abortion. They just won't kill God's little babies. That's what they won't do. I'll tell you. But the position that it's going to put doctors in, let's say a woman comes in for an abortion and she's not white, and the doctor performs the abortion, and the woman is approached later by some of these anti-woman groups that mask their real character by saying, well, we're anti-abortion. No, you're not. You're anti-woman. You cowardly sons of bitches. Why don't you come right out and say it? Your Bible tells you that women are second class. Anti-abortion like hell. But they're going to approach a woman, and they're going to say, now, were you coerced into this, ma'am? The only time some of these white men in Georgia would call a black woman ma'am is when they're trying to get something like this. Ma'am, did you, were you coerced? Did that doctor ask you if you were coerced? No, he never asked me that. Boom. Lawsuit. There you go. State Representative Nikki Randall, a Democrat, who voted against this madness, said, quote, it's going to be put physicians in an awkward position. They're going to have to act under the duress of thinking, okay, did I ask the right question, end quote. So now we're going to have a law here in Georgia. Yes, we are. Amen. We're going to have a law here in Georgia that says anyone who solicits or coerces a woman to have an abortion based in any way on account of the race, color, or sex of the unborn child will face 10 years in prison. Unless the child has a chance of being gay, in which case, go ahead and do the abortion. Who gives a damn? You hypocritical sons of bitches. I swear to God. Okay, last one. This is Dave in Wetumpka, Alabama. He's kind of down here the same reason I am, just pretty much for the comedy. Dear Mike, the school, this is regarding the Catholic school, the rejection of the youngsters out in Colorado because both parents are moms. The school may have done those kids a greater favor than they realized. Sooner or later, the church's beliefs in the sinfulness of those two kids' parents' relationship would become known to their classmates. Can you imagine how justified those classmates would feel in persecuting those kids? I can. Even at the advanced age of 71, I still have a clear memory of 6 months of rejection by my Catholic school classmates as I sat alone in the schoolyard during recesses that should have been periods of enjoyment. Why the rejection? Well, for years I wondered what went wrong. A few years before he died, my father explained it. I had been enrolled a month late because the public school next door wouldn't enroll me because I was 3 months shy of my 6th birthday. The kids had formed their cliques, and I was not included. The first day, when I tried to join a group of them, they said, "We didn't ask you." I tried one more time, but the rest of the young lambs saw what was happening and joined in the chorus. "We didn't ask you!" 6 months later, I became so distraught that I had screaming nightmares and had to be removed from that school. Strangely, in spite of my distress, I learned to read, write cursive script, and do double column addition and subtraction. So I guess this speaks well for their teaching ability, although my mother's school teacher sister had me tested and found that I was ready for school and maybe then some. So my native intelligence may have been a help. And by the way, when I hear that a class of 35 is too big, I have to laugh. My Catholic school class had 70 kids in it, including one with a brain tumor who one day stood up on her seat and undressed. Poor Janet died shortly afterward, but not before she grabbed hold of me one day on my way home from school. Lord, she was strong, and her eyes rolled up like in a horror movie. Of course, I escaped, frightened as all hell. Anyway, the rejection of those children by the school may have been a blessing in disguise. Even in the unlikely event that their classmates didn't learn of the church's attitude toward the children's parents, they would learn about it during religious education and carry one heck of a load of guilt and shame. So thank goodness for disguised blessings. Dave and Wetumpka.
gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Foxhole Atheist writes in, Mike, why don't the doctors in Georgia take a stand? All the doctors have to do is tell the state to stay the hell out of their clinic, or they leave the state. What would the state do if 50% of the doctors up and left? When are we going to remember how to practice civil disobedience in America? Yeah, I agree. Certainly agree. The doctors who are the ones who are supposed to be intimidated by this bill in Georgia that says if someone of color is coerced into getting an abortion, the doctor can go to prison for 10 years. And this, of course, is the legislation is being put together by the typical white Republicans that you find in the South. Oh, God. Okay, last one. I got to get this in. This is from Tom in California. Mike, you may have missed today's Ninth Circuit Court decision. That's in San Francisco, right? Which upheld Under God and In God We Trust in the country's pledge and on coins. The reasons the Bush-appointed judge gave was that it has nothing to do with religion and everything to do with patriotism and all of our, quote, proud ideals, end quote. Below you'll find an excerpt from the Associated Press. So here we go. Religion is now officially the same as patriotism, and anything less is un-American, just like corporations are citizens, and thus citizens themselves are now less than human, and certainly citizens without rights. The insanity is mounting. Lord of the Flies, here we come, Tom. And here's the excerpt from the AP. The Federal Appeals Court upheld the use of the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance and in God we trust on U.S. currency, rejecting arguments today that the phrases violate the separation of church and state. Judge Carlos B., who was appointed by Bush in 2003, wrote for the majority in Thursday's 2-1 ruling. Quote, the Pledge of Allegiance serves to unite our vast nation through the proud recitation of some of the ideals upon which our republic was founded, he said. In a separate 3-0 ruling Thursday, the appeals court upheld the inscription of the national motto, In God We Trust, on U.S. coins and currency, citing an earlier Ninth Circuit panel that ruled the phrase is ceremonial and patriotic and, quote, has nothing whatsoever to do with the establishment of religion, end quote. Greg Katsas, who argued the case on behalf of the U.S. government when the appellate court heard the case in December, said the panel made the right decision today. Quote, this is Greg. I think these two phrases encapsulate the philosophy on which the nation was founded. There is a religious aspect to saying one nation under God, but it isn't like a prayer. When someone says the pledge, they're not praying to God, they're pledging allegiance to the country, the flag, and the ideals of the country, end quote. No, they're not. It's very simple. It says, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. I remember when that phrase was added under God. It was during the big commie scare back in the mid-50s. We all came back from summer vacation, and the teachers said, now, children, this morning when we stand to say our prayer and recite the pledge, we are adding here. Miss Francis will give you an example. A pledge of allegiance to the flag, United States of America, to the republic for which it stands. One nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, shall now say one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Do you understand, children? Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And so we did it. There was no option of standing out in the hallway, and I will guarantee you that none of us would have done that anyway. So after we recited the pledge, then of course we, now let's all bow our heads and close our eyes, every head bowed, every eye closed. Dear God, we are gathered in this classroom this morning to learn very important things. Please guide us. Amen. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Amen.
Amen.
Those were the days. And then that damn old Madeline Murray O'Hare came along and just drove prayer right out the schools. Huh? Wasn't she from Texas?
Woo!
One Nation Under God and In God We Trust has nothing to do with religion and everything to do with patriotism. Now, I missed this. I'm glad Tom sent it in because this is the scariest damn piece of news that I have read, oh, I don't know, in the past. This is even scarier than shock and awe when we bombed and murdered in Baghdad. Patriotism and religion are now one and the same, according to the Ninth Circuit in San Francisco. Pushing your subscriptions. I don't know. It's hard for me to do that, I guess. We're going to put something up. Aren't we the website? Or are people going to be emailed, our subscribers? If you have a subscription, it's running out. And a lot of them are running out because it was right around this time last year that we first went on the air. And had a bunch of people sign up. If you let your subscription expire, it's going to have a profound effect on this program. So please don't do that. I realize times are tough. They're tougher now than they were a year ago. This program will cost you 25 cents a show, 52 bucks a year. If you can do it, if you can't do it, we certainly understand. But if you can do it, please renew your podcast subscription. All right? All right. Just one more email into your phone calls. This is from Dr. Tim, who's a math coach, among other things. Mike, I've been in education 35 years as a classroom teacher, K-12 math supervisor, college professor, and most recently math coach and staff developer for struggling schools nationwide. Let me digress what Dr. Tim is writing about here, national education standards that I mentioned a few minutes ago. Back to his email. You need to know that the circular firing squad, known as No Child Left Behind, has had a number of negative effects. For example, under the watchful eye of George W. Bush when he served as governor of Texas, student achievement scores rose so dramatically as to be dubbed the Texas Miracle and used as a point of campaign pride by then-candidate Bush when he ran for president, until it was revealed that lower-achieving students who pre-tested poorly were urged to stay home on statewide test day. Other states have lowered their standards to the point that subsequent higher scores on statewide tests were used as, quote, proof of student achievement, end quote, in order to extort larger amounts of federal funding under clearly false pretenses. Bottom line, there really is no such thing as an American student being assessed in international tests. We have Georgia students, Maine students, Idaho students. But since every state operates under a disparate quality of standards, American students held to high standards simply do not exist. Another example of deregulation becoming a national crisis and long-term security issue. Let's stop this madness and put strong national standards in place for American students. Dr. Tim, in his last name, who certainly has had a lot of experience in education. I agree with that idea. I'm waiting. I'll probably hear from Kay, our educational correspondent. I don't know what her position is on it. But I agree at this point with Dr. Tim that... And national standards are absolutely required. When we hear about German students, the point he's trying to make, and obviously you know this, when you hear about German students or Japanese students or British students or Chinese students, that means something. But there's no such thing as an American student, as Dr. Tim points out. And that's because you have states like Texas, Kentucky, some of these other southern states who want to make sure that the little darlings being educated understand that all power flows and all education and all meaning flows from the great cloud being in the sky. It has nothing to do with math, science, that evil evolution, paleontology, history, archaeology, and certainly nothing to do with biology. It's getting harder and harder, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Zipper is in Chicago. Oh, my God. Hi, Zipper.
Hello, honey. How the hell are you?
I'm fair to partly cloudy. let me tell.
That's what it is here. Pouring rain.
let me tell just a second here. Zipper is a friend of ours from Chicago. When we first moved to Chicago, we got to know Zipper. Her girlfriend was a Chicago cop. And we used to get together, the four of us, and go to a bar there called The Closet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sit there and drink, and drink, and drink. How you been, Zipper? So Zipper, full disclosure, Zipper and I and Kathy know each other. All right. What'd you call?
I have a great idea that will eliminate the federal deficit and make all the states solvent again.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
okay.
Seriously. I'm totally serious. It's called Tax the Churches.
Tax the churches, yeah.
Yeah, okay. They're an enormous untapped source of tax revenue. If all the churches and synagogues and mosques and Buddhists got rid of that 501c3, you know, or whatever
it is.
The income tax that they would have to pay to the feds would eliminate the deficit, and the property taxes they'd have to pay would make the state solvent. They're huge, they're everywhere, and I do believe that if you're doing business in this country, you must pay taxes.
Well, and there is a lot of money to be made in the religion business.
Right, and they are a business, so they have to pay taxes, and that would pull us out of this economy. Think of the number of churches and synagogues and all the money there. How do we start a national movement to Congress?
Zipper, look, the Ninth Circuit in San Francisco ruled today, at least three of the judges ruled today, that in God we trust on our money, and under God, in the Pledge of Allegiance, all is patriotism and not religion. So, based on that, let me ask you, dear heart, how in the world do you think that the churches would allow themselves to be taxed?
Because I think the people are tired of paying tax, and they would get the idea that, you know, my state, like, they cut our library hours, they cut the bus services, they eliminated all the express routes.
Yeah.
And if the churches were paying taxes, we could have our services back.
Well, that's very true. But still, the idea of the churches allowing themselves to be taxed is completely out of the question.
Nobody goes to church and gives them any money until they're taxed.
Well,
take away their income, and they're going to have to agree.
Zipper, I think it's a great idea, believe me, but it'll never happen. It'll never happen. So I don't think there is even an Ice Cube's chance in hell of starting a movement to try to, because you know the first thing the religionists will say, separation of church and state, you can't tax us, which is what the whole thing is based on right now. So it'll never happen. But
they want a voice in government. They're always talking about what the law should be, you know, at church and, I mean, state and federal level.
Well,
why aren't they paying taxes on their business?
Because ostensibly they never endorse a certain candidate, which is hog snot, and I know it as well as you do, but that's their cover. And the last thing you or I or anybody in this country wants to do is to take on organized religion. I don't care what religion it is. Don't even take it on. But I agree with you. I agree with you. But there's such a thing as tilting at windmills. You understand what I'm saying, Zip?
Yeah.
All right.
So what else do I have to do? It's not like I have anything to do except read.
Well, just continue to raise hell, which I remember you were pretty good at doing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So are you.
Well, that's true. All right, Zipper, thanks. Don't be a stranger, okay?
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, we had some. Zipper was one of the first people that we met in Chicago. The right-wingers I worked with at WLS were just absolute pricks. I mean, they really were. But Zipper popped up from someplace, I don't know, and said, hey, let's go get a beer. And we did. Sweet lady. Love Zipper. Sally is in Oakland, California, listening to Green 960. Hey, Sally.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I know people from for at least 20 years that have been homeschooling their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Different members of my family. I have family in Denver, North Carolina, and Austin, Texas. And they have all, and also a ex-stepson.
Mm-hmm.
They were homeschooling their children also.
Right.
And this has been going on maybe with the purpose of closing the schools.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, very, very concerned and really think that we need to get active because these people are very well organized mm-hmm. and have been organized for many years.
That's true. That's true.
And I just recently read The Family by Jeff.
Charlotte, yeah.
Uh-huh. And
scary stuff.
It is.
Very scary stuff.
It is. And I, you know, I have most of my relatives
mm-hmm.
are far right.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a brother that was a professor, a science professor.
Mm-hmm.
And he passed away, but he was the only one in my family that I could talk politics with.
Well, I think, Sally, I have to leave there because we're flat out of time, but I think, you know, I think homeschooling is not entirely a bad idea if it's done with the right, you know, for the right reasons. But you're right, the way it's been organized around a religious principle means that the only thing they're trying to do is kill public education. Our military affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, economic affairs, Kate Petrini, education, Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, ethics advisors, and the executive producer of the program and engineer is Kathy Bay. A couple of quick emails and back to your calls. The same Bush-appointed judge who wrote for the 2-1 majority about In God We Trust and Under God is patriotic and not religious is the same judge who okayed National Security Agency warrantless spying and threw out privacy lawsuits against AT&T for cooperating with warrantless government collection of personal data. This decision essentially eliminated the Fourth Amendment against unreasonable search and seizure of personal property and records. From Chico. I didn't know that. this is from Susan. The Ninth Circuit proves that Zipper is correct. Basically, Mike, what the Ninth Circuit said is that God is not religious. So Zipper is correct. And since they are not religious, they should be taxed. Furthermore, since they are in the pledge and on the money, that's free advertising, and they should have to pay for that. Every time the pledge is spoken and money printed, they should pay an advertising fee. Susan in Squim, Washington. Well, there you go, Zipper. Of course, I agree with that, too, but... John is in Mission Hills, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, John.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I was listening to your rant about the problem they're having in the EU. By the way, they refer to Portugal, Ireland, Greece.
Yeah, the pigs. Right.
But, well, you know, again, I was raised, the first 8 years of my life was poisoned by, my education was poisoned by Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
So much so I didn't learn anything, I don't think, until I got into public school. And the reason was I was just trying to survive those black-clad banshees that were kept thrusting this cross with a dead guy on it.
Oh, man.
But listen, I saw a quote the other day, and it said that hope is two beautiful sisters, courage and anger.
Yeah.
And the people in the United States have neither. I at least have anger. I admit I don't have courage, but since I don't have both, I don't have hope. I'm just like the people I'm criticizing.
Well, no, I'd be willing to bet that you do have hope, John. And yeah, I saw that quote. As a matter of fact, I think I mentioned it earlier in the week. It's a great quote. I love it. Hey, John, I got to move. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Bob the poet is calling from Tennessee. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Mike. I remember when they changed the pledge too, and for several years thereafter, every assembly in school was a muttering when it came to that section. We didn't do too well. I have a suggestion though for the pledge.
All right.
Back on my birthday in 1983, I wrote this out, and it's going to be shocking when you first hear it, so I'll have something to say afterwards, perhaps. Don't make a judgment right away, just listen. I pledge allegiance to the Constitution of the United States of America, a democratic republic of people dedicated to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness with equality and justice for all.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one.
Now, it seems to me to be a kind of a compromise. We take God out, but we also take the flag out. Mm-hmm. But we put the Constitution in, and I think that's what we should pledge to. But we give to the people dedicated to life. People dedicated to life. Mm-hmm. We give that to the right. And to all of us, actually, because we are all dedicated to life, even though we're accused otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from a founding document, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
It is indeed.
So even though it's shocking to think of changing the Constitution, I mean the Pledge of Allegiance to the Constitution instead of the flag,
mm-hmm.
it's a protest against this militarism and this war mentality, this economy of production for destruction.
It's and the thing is, I don't know why people don't get this. When I say people, not the leaders, but the people, this militaristic society, this militaristic bent to this country is killing us. It is absolutely killing us. It's going to kill us without a shot fired by some invader. We are killing ourselves. We're choking to death. We are dying. The nation is going down the toilet, all because of our militaristic adventures around the globe, our insistence on sending troops to 80 or 90 different countries. We are choking to death, Bob. And I just, you know, choking is not a very good way to die. You know what I'm saying?
One of the least enjoyable, I should think.
So I've heard. It's yes. Kind of a mess. All right, thanks, Bob.
Talk to you again.
Okay, appreciate it. Oh. Well. Tomorrow night on this program, a best of or a rebroadcast. We always jokingly refer to them as best ofs. So Kathy and I can attend a school function for Molly, one of the last ones. And it's always been on a Friday night. We've passed the last 2 years. This year we're going to do it. So we will see you live again on Monday. All right. Have a good weekend. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.